Can we turn, please, to Daniel chapter 6? And I want to particularly center on those verses between 16 and 22, where we see the protection given to this man Daniel by the Lord. Daniel was taken into captivity to Babylon when he was a young man, a youth, I suppose you'd say. And the Lord strengthened and sustained him through the days of Nebuchadnezzar and subsequent rulers. And then, of course, the defeat of the Babylonians by the Medes and the Persians. And so here we have him as a much, much older man. And under the man called Darius, who is the head of the empire at this time. Now, Daniel was a man that faithfully followed the Lord all his life. I think it's true to say that if you were to read through the book of Daniel, I don't think you'd find any criticism of him. He sought and did glorify the Lord while seeking at the same time to live in separation from the same world. That old expression, you know, in the world, but not of the world. And that was Daniel. And of course, he was able to do this as an old man because he began as a young man. And he never compromised all through his life. The Lord always came first in every area of his life. And now, as an older man, when again he's going to make a stand for the Lord and knows what the result will be of that stand, he puts his trust entirely in the Lord. Remember, he had to live amongst superstition, idolatry and corruption. There's not much difference today, is there? We live in a world full of superstition. We live in a world full of idolatry. And we live in a world full of corruption. Yet this man Daniel, through God's enabling grace and help, maintained a faithful testimony. And he faithfully served his God. And we likewise, as we look ahead to an unknown future, both, you know, the world situation, the national situation, our church situation, but we are to, like Daniel, maintain a faithful testimony while the Lord gives us breath in our bodies. We remain a faithful testimony in our church, to our families, to our neighbours, to our friends, to the world. And we seek, with his help, the Lord's help, to faithfully serve our God. Now, as we know, reading the history of this man Daniel, that the Lord enabled him to interpret dreams and visions. And it's King Darius takes over, if you like, from the Babylonians. And he also recognized the qualities that Daniel had. The fact that he had served the previous regime faithfully was his testimony. And so Darius gives this man Daniel a high position, if you like, of authority in his regime. And it's true that we can read that the kings of the Medes and the Persians tended to shift responsibility onto others. At the beginning of chapter 6 and verse 1, we read, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And so, you know, this power is dissipated to many different people. And also the Medes and the Persians, they liked making decrees. And that was enabled them to show, we're in authority. Doesn't change much today, does it? You know, all the bylaws that the council make. We are making these bylaws. And then we have, of course, our dear friends up in the Haste of Westminster passing this law and that law, and so on it goes on. And hey, they love to do it. But you see, when they made a decree in the days of Darius and his people, those decrees not only bound the people to obey them, but as we find out here, also the king. It wasn't a question of, you do what I say and I'll do what I like. It was a question that, you do what I say and I'll do the same. I have to do the same. And it tells us there in verse 8, now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. And later on in verse 12, and they went before the king and spake concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. And of course we have another example of this, of course, in the book of Esther, where Haman, again, I think these men in the top are very weak people, but anyway, he inveigles himself into the favour of the leader and gets this terrible decree made out that will massacre Esther and all her people. And so, through the Lord's enabling, she comes before the king and she pleads for her people. But you see, that decree wasn't revoked, but it couldn't be. What they did do was bring in another one that superseded it and enabled them to defend. And of course, we all know what happened to Haman. I think it's J. Vernon McGee that has a lovely section on this, and he said the man that was invited to dinner and ended up on the gallows. But of course, you see, as I said at the beginning, there's 120 satraps and three governors, one of which of course is Daniel. And of course, because Daniel was so efficient and Daniel was so honest and Daniel was so incorrupt, and Daniel would not compromise, and Daniel would not fiddle the books, the others were jealous of him, because they were probably very much like that. That was a good position to be on. We can feather our own nests now. Things don't change much, do they, as when one looks at politics. And we read, don't we, in verse 4, then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion for fault. Isn't that wonderful? Really? What a testimony. You have these men, corrupt as they come, trying to get Daniel, and didn't. I mean, they must have investigated him, mustn't they? And it says there, doesn't it, in verse 4, that they couldn't find no charge or fault. And then it tells you why. Because he was faithful. You know, Daniel wasn't worried what these men thought. He wasn't concerned about anything but being faithful to his God. And being faithful to his God meant being faithful to the calling that he had under Darius. And it tells us this, doesn't it, that nor was there any error or fault found in him. So what do they do? Well, you know, they scratch their heads, they get together, and they think, how can we bring this man down? And I imagine they all must, one common goal, you see. You know, interesting, it's very similar, isn't it? Remember when Pilate sent Jesus to Herod for a mock trial? And it says, doesn't it, they were enemies, but now they became friends. It's interesting, when righteousness and godliness and faithfulness come up, the enemies of the world get together against. Because they see something different. Something that they haven't got. And so these men come together and they think, now what on earth can we do? How can we get this man? So they come up with this infamous decree. I tell you what, let's make it illegal for anyone to pray within the next 30 days. Let's just pick 30 days. It wouldn't have mattered if it was 25 or 35, but they picked 30. And the only way you are, only person you can pray to is Darius. A bit like the emperor worship they had in the early days of the Christian church. They know very well that Daniel will certainly not do that. Daniel prays to his God. I wonder sometimes if they ever said, anyone that goes to a prayer meeting will be fined £100 or spend a week in prison. I wonder how many people would not go. When they bring in a law that says you're not allowed to pray within so many yards of an abortion centre, how many people go there and pray? I was thinking that when that lady was arrested in Birmingham last year. 3 police officers it took for a woman silently praying. It gives you a state of the police, doesn't it? And I wonder what they would have done if every true Christian in Birmingham had gone there, all together, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people, I wonder how they'd have coped. But there was one faithful lady. My conscience belongs to the Lord, not to the state. And I hope that would be a lesson to me. My conscience belongs to the Lord. My integrity belongs to the Lord, not to the state, not even to the church, but to the Lord. May it be true for every one of us to make a stand where we may have to in these coming days. Now the king, Darius, always comes across these men as a fairly weakish sort of character. Perhaps they flattered him. You know, the way they go, you know, oh king, live forever, and all this stuff, you know. And I mean, like the old days, if you went into royalty, you had to go in on your knees almost, and you say the wrong word and your head could be chopped off, and so on. But they got in there and they flattered his ego. They told him what a wonderful man he was, how great it was to serve him, and a real creepy load of politicians, weren't they? Typical. Flattery and all that sort of stuff. And he, because he listens to it, and he doesn't even think about the ramifications, the implications, what does he do? He signs it. Boom. It's law. Remember, the law of the Medes and Persians, once it's there, it's there. It's a verse in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 20. Do you see a man hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Now Daniel knows about this decree, and he's not daft. He knows why it's been brought in. He knows these men are out to get him. But he doesn't change one bit. He continues as before. Tells us there, doesn't it? Verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. Now notice this is straight away. He's not putting this off at all. He went home, and in his upper rooms, with his windows open, so there's no hiding in anywhere, he's there, he's open towards Jerusalem. He knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Notice that, since early days. You know, prayer is something that we need to start when we're young as believers and to carry on. And that's, once a habit like that is got into, it doesn't become a habit, it becomes a way of living. A way of life. I trust that's for all of us. That prayer, particularly first thing in the morning, is a way of life. And never ever an inconvenience. Remember when they were brought, the apostles were brought before the people in Acts chapter 4:19. What do they say? But Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to you, you judge. For we cannot but speak and think the things that we have seen and heard. And later on, we obey God rather than men. And of course, Daniel continued praying. It tells us there he kneeled down on his knees, not just once, not just twice, but three times, and he prayed. He gave thanks to God, as he'd always done. And of course his enemies, they knew where to find him. They set their trap, if you like, on sacred ground. And of course we have an example, don't we, in the New Testament there, in Matthew 26 and verse 36, where, you know, the Lord goes to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And who leads his arrest, the people that arrest him? Judas. Judas Iscariot. Why? Because he knew that's where the Lord would be. They knew where to find him. But you notice here that Daniel is not delivered straight away. The Lord doesn't just say, well, well done, Daniel, that's the end of it. Thank you very much. Darius doesn't say, well, Daniel's an exception. And remember back when the four young men, the young men were put into the fiery furnace. They weren't delivered before they went in the fiery furnace. They were delivered while they were in the fiery furnace with one that looked like the Son of God. The same with Daniel. He wasn't delivered from the lion's den. He was put in with the lions. He must be put in this pit full of lions. Now, I expect, like me, you've watched very number of wildlife programs with lions involved. And we only see them on the screen, don't we? I've never yet got close to a lion. The closest I've got is through the bars in a zoo. And they're different. They're not wild lions. They're not trained to kill and to eat people. Now you imagine what these lions were like that were in this pit, which Daniel's placed in. They must have smelt awful. You see, lions don't clean their teeth. They don't have a mouthwash. Their breath would have stunk. And he could have smelt the breath, death on their breath, so to speak. And of course the pit is sealed. It's actually sealed with the king's seal. In other words, that's impossible for anyone, even the king, to interfere. Verse 17 tells us that, doesn't it? Verse 17, there we are. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, and the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. But of course, Daniel is miraculously protected. Now it tells us there in verse 18, the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought to him, and also sleep went from him. I think it serves him right. But he's had a bad night, doesn't he? It's amazing how the Lord does that sometimes. If he wants certain things done, he gives a person a bad night, gets them praying, gets them thinking, gets them doing this, that and the other. And all the king can do is lie on his bed or his couch or whatever he's there and just reflect on his silliness and on his pride. And sometimes the Lord must make us do that, perhaps. Maybe we've been foolish in an action or speech or something. And the Lord gives us a few hours of sleeplessness to reflect on it. Maybe our pride sometimes needs to have a bit of a knock. The Lord might give us a bit of sleeplessness to deal with it. You see, it wasn't by accident that these lions' mouths were closed. They weren't full up. They had just had a big meal and didn't fancy Daniel. Remember, these beasts had eaten human flesh before. And I'm told that once a wild cat gets a taste for human flesh, it becomes what they call a man-eater. It's something they prefer. And so they would have been quite used to eating people. And they would have, normal circumstances, they would have fancied Daniel and chopped him up into bits before they are. Remember what happened. We read in there, verse 24, if you like, their normal behavior, natural behavior, should I say, or normal. The king gave command and they brought those men who had accused Daniel and they cast them into the den of lions. Them, their children and their wives. And then it says the lions overpowered them. That's all of them. And broke all their bones in pieces before they ever come to the bottom of the den. I mean, these were really fierce, ferocious lions we're talking about here. But you see, the Lord had sent his angel to guard Daniel and to shut up the mouths of the lions. Tells us in Psalm 37, doesn't it? Psalm 34 and verse 7, the angel of the Lord camps around those that fear him and delivers them. And of course we mentioned, did we not, the situation with Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. And when this is Nebuchadnezzar's testimony now. Sent his angel and delivered his servants and trusted in him. And of course, remember the situation in Acts chapter 12, where Herod puts Peter and James in prison. James he kills with the sword. puts Peter in a cell. I imagine he's ready for the chop the next day. But we read in the night, "Behold, the angel of the Lord came to him, and the light shined in prison. And he woke up Peter, and he guided him out of the prison. And everything was unlocked for him." Hey, the Lord delivered Peter. Didn't deliver James, though, remember? James's time was over. He had a home call to glory. But Peter still had ministry. And no doubt in the early days of the church, many Christians were fed to lions in Rome. God didn't deliver them either. So, not always can we just say, it doesn't matter, it won't happen to me. It may. But may the Lord may call us to make a terrible, have to make a big sacrifice. And the only delivery we'll get, when I say the only, the best delivery perhaps is glory. But think of Darius. He comes down in the morning. "Nay, the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him." And it says here, "because he believed in his God." And then, of course, we know what happened then with the next commander, Darius. You see, this king was jubilant that Daniel was unhurt. And of course, Daniel didn't push himself forward. What does he say? "My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." That's where his preservation came from, the Lord. His trust had been well founded. And we read in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 17. This is Paul's testament at the end of his days. Near the end of his days, shall I say. "But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that the message might be preached fully through me, that all the Gentiles might hear. Also, I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. The Lord stood with me." Well, surely that's our prayer and our trust for this year, isn't it? The Lord will stand with us. Whatever happens, we have to remember that. Not what he did in the past, but what he's going to do now and for us in the future. And these accusers, they fell into the trap that they had laid for Daniel. And sometimes the Lord does that. And God will not allow the persecutor of his people to go unpunished. Sometimes the punishment is quite swift and quite sudden, as it happened here. Shortly after Daniel's release, these other lot were bunged in the lion's pit. But sometimes the wheels of God's justice go a little bit slower. And of course, the Lord was magnified through all what has happened and took place in that situation. And don't we treasure this? That we know that all things, not most, not 98%, but that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Now another decree was issued, and instead of the worship of God being declared illegal, it was almost made compulsory. complete turnaround. And Daniel also continued to serve faithfully the Lord in Darius' kingdom, right to the very end of his days. And isn't it wonderful? I think these are wonderful words here. In the end, in Daniel chapter 12, we read, Daniel says, "My Lord, what shall be the end of these things? Lord, what's going to happen to my family this year? Lord, what's going to happen to our church this year? What's going to happen to me personally this year? What's going to happen this and that and the other?" And he said, "Go your way, Daniel." This morning, the Lord says to us, individually, go your way and put your name on the end. He says, go your way, Helsham Baptist Church. In every area that we have. As I say, Daniel continued to faithfully serve the Lord right to the very last moment that the Lord gave him breath. And there's a lesson for us, isn't it? We can worry about all manner of things. And people are worried about things. Where's the situation in the Middle East going to go to? What will happen if there's an escalation of the war in Ukraine? What will happen as regards the politics in our country later this year? And what will happen here? And what will happen there? And what will happen to this person and that person? And the Lord knows. The Lord is in control. And what he's called us to do is what he called Daniel to do. To be faithful and to serve him. And may that be so for us here in our little fellowship here this morning. As we look to the year that lies ahead, however far it may go, this may be our last year on this earth. Maybe next year we'll be looking back saying, "Do you remember old so-and-so? He's in glory, or she's in glory now." Who knows? Who knows what illness might cripple us this coming year? But also know what grace and what blessing will also come upon us as well. Let's serve the Lord faithfully and fully, but let's also be realistic. We desperately need the Lord in our lives personally and in the church, and we allow him to vindicate us.